Good morning. My name is Joseph Burke. I'm a graduate research assistant at Texas Tech University's Department of Plant and Soil Science and Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Lubbock. Today, I have the privilege of presenting to you my research, or part of my research, on temporal carbon dynamics and semi-arid cropping systems in West Texas. When we think about West Texas, a few things come to mind. Cotton, Texas Tech football, which is not doing very well, and unfortunately, the Dust Bowl. And primarily, the Dust Bowl was highlighted by an event in the semi-arid region, stretching from south central Texas all the way up through the High Plains. This picture was taken in Hansford County in 1935, which is just on the border with Texas and Oklahoma. But when you fast forward to 2013 in Terry County, which is just south of Lubbock, we see that we still have some of these events that occur. While they're more rare than they used to be, when we have climatic variability, they tend to occur still. And it begs the question, has anything changed? And yes, wind erosion has been reduced by 43% since the 1930s on the Texas High Plains, while there's been a significant increase in overall agricultural productivity on the same region. So it begs the question, how can these two things coexist when we live in an environment that has limited annual rainfall, about 475 millimeters, high average temperatures of 17.5 degrees Celsius. It's the fourth windiest place in the United States, if you're wondering, with an average wind speed of 20 kilometers per hour, and low original soil organic matter levels. So how can we build both of these things together? And the question really comes from building soil carbon and analyzing soil health. So my co-authors and I came up with a project in 2014 where we were examining the impact of conservation tillage and cover cropping on soil carbon, soil health, soil water holding capacity, and yield. And we looked at it in three locations: Beeville along the Texas coast, Chillicothe on the Rolling Plains, and La Mesa on the Texas High Plains. And we were examining soil organic carbon, the potassium permanganate oxidizable carbon fraction, the Haney soil health test, stored soil moisture using a neutron probe detection, and lint yield and economic analysis, trying to understand how these cropping systems work together to promote an overall system that can help farmers in our region. Today, I'm going to focus on the soil carbon aspects and talk about the soil organic carbon and the permanganate oxidizable carbon fractions. So the objectives just within the carbon are to quantify the impacts of conservation management practices, including tillage and cover cropping, on soil organic carbon fractions, including the permanganate oxidizable carbon fraction. We examine the temporal availability of that throughout the growing season. And so when we started thinking about how these things are going to change, the idea came that soil organic carbon is supposed to be stable. It'll remain stable throughout the growing season, and while that we'll see the changes to be in the permanganate oxidizable carbon fraction, with the goal being that if we can increase our soil organic carbon levels, we'll increase aggregate stability, which has a whole litany of good qualities to it, but the best one being reducing the susceptibility to wind erosion, which is our main problem on the High Plains. So the research site is at the Agricultural Complex for Advanced Research and Extension Systems in La Mesa, Texas, which is located about 60 minutes south of Lubbock. The system that we'll be looking at today is right here, and it was established in 1998 as an experiment to examine the effects of no-tillage and glyphosate resistance. But in 2014, they split the no-till rye plots into two, and we have the no-tillage with a mixed cover as well. So we're examining a conventional till with a no-till mixed and a no-till rye. And this is in a continuous cotton system. So it'll be winter fallow with the conventional tillage, and then we'll have cotton in the summertime in all those plots. So the experimental design, it's a randomized complete block design with three replications, and the treatments include the conventional tillage with winter fallow, which I'll refer to as CT moving forward, no tillage with a rye cover planted at 33.6 kilograms per hectare, and that will be referred to as NTR, and then the NTM is our no tillage with a mixed cover planted at the same ratio. The plot sizes, they're 16 rows by 76 meters long, so they're commercially available plots, and we irrigated to an extent with deficit irrigation using a LIPA system. In 2016, we were only able to irrigate 5.4 inches throughout the whole growing season because of limited rainfall and lack of stored soil moisture that we can draw from to irrigate. And then here you can see the design of the plots themselves. It's really nice to see in the wintertime. You can see exactly where our farm manager has tilled and where he has not tilled yet for the second tillage. The methods that we used, we started soil sampling in July of 2016, but I'll show you data beginning in April 2016. We normally sample in April, and in July, my boss asked me to go collect some soil samples for microbial biomass carbon, and when I ran the results for POXC, she didn't believe my results. And so she made me go back and reanalyze them because they were so high. And when I reanalyzed them, I got the same results, and then we had another lab do them, and they got the same results. So then we started thinking, maybe there's something going on with the carbon that we want to start examining more often. And that's why I started collecting monthly samples beginning in July of 2016. So you will see a gap. We collected them from the 0 to 15 centimeter depth within the plant canopy, because we want to understand how carbon is transforming within where those roots are going to be growing. And then we did 12 composite cores per plot. We analyzed these for soil organic carbon with combustion method through the Texas A&M AgriLife Research and Extension Lab in College Station. And then the potassium permanganate, we used the wheel method with the reduction with dilute permanganate in our own lab. So this is where things start to get interesting. On the x-axis, we have time from when we started sampling in April through May of 2017. And then on the y-axis, we have soil organic carbon in grams per kilogram. The tan bar we'll see is the conventional tillage, the blue bar is the no-till mixed, and the red bar is the no-till rye. When we planted cotton in May of 2016 and started doing our measurements in July of 2016, we noticed a significant increase from April to July, which we hypothesize is due to rhizodeposition within the root zone by the plants themselves, stimulating their own nutrient cycling. We noticed significant differences in August with a reduction in the rye, significant differences again in September, and in October, when the cotton plant stops growing actively and starts maturing those cotton bolls, we started to notice a drop in the organic carbon, which we hypothesize is due to a lack of photorespiration within the plant itself. We harvested the cotton in early November. They're harvesting right now, so hopefully we'll get some interesting results this year. And then we planted our cover in mid-December of 2016. We noticed an increase in the soil organic carbon in January, a reduction in February. We had a pretty harsh January, and so we noticed a pretty interesting reaction there. And then in March, once temperatures started to warm up, because we had a pretty early spring this year with lots of moisture, we had an incredible increase in the amount of soil organic carbon in both the no-till treatments. With a reduction again back to April 2017 numbers. So what's interesting to look at is if you soil sample like we do for research in April of 2016 and April of 2017, there would be no difference between your measurements. But throughout the growing season, there's a lot of variability in what's actually going on within the system. Most of our farmers in the region, though, take their soil samples beginning in January and February. So based on those results, what they're seeing is not what may be actually going on in the system at the time when they're going to go plant their crops. And so that makes an important recommendation for nutrient availability and fertilizer recommendations. In the temporal potassium permanganate oxidizable carbon, or POXC, we see the same trend. So again, on the x-axis, we have time, and on the y-axis, we have the permanganate oxidizable carbon in milligrams per kilogram. We see a similar trend, but with a slight lack in time frame, which we hypothesize is due to the fact that the microbes are constantly mineralizing that the material that's been added to the soil through the rye, or through the covers, and that there may be a general lack in the amount of availability from 1 month to the next based on the photorespiration and mineralization. Again, we follow the same trend with a decrease here in August, and then with cotton harvest here, we see a very similar trend to what we had in the soil organic carbon. When you compare the two tests together, soil organic carbon and potassium permanganate oxidizable carbon, we see a really nice general trend here with a unit increase in permanganate is similar to a unit increase in organic carbon. With soil health measuring, what they're doing now is they want to use a new test, or they're looking at potassium permanganate oxidizable carbon as a proxy for soil organic carbon, because it costs about 88 cents a sample to run permanganate oxidizable carbon, and our cost is $12.50 to run organic carbon through soil organic carbon. So it's a much cheaper test, and it's a little bit, it serves as a proxy for the other tests as well. And we have a nice relationship here. And this has been reported in other literature as well, that there's a nice relationship between the two. So in conclusion, soil organic carbon is very variable throughout the season, and it's more variable than has previously been reported, especially in semi-arid cropping systems, but it may be influenced by rhizodeposition. POXE accounts in our system for 6% of the soil organic carbon, but in a literature review published by Coleman et al. In 2013, he only reported 2%. And we think that this difference is probably because our permanganate oxidizable carbon fraction accounts for more, it's more microbial available carbon because we have less residual organic carbon in our soil systems. So with less background carbon, you have a higher microbial available fraction from the decomposition. We think that plant roots may play a more important role in soil carbon dynamics and nutrient cycling of semi-arid soils than have been previously reported, and that sampling times really do matter when you're collecting soil samples, especially for soil health measurements. With that, I want to thank my fellow co-authors, Dr. Katie Lewis, who is my major professor and all-around awesomeness, for paying and putting up with me for the last couple of years. Dr. Wayne Keeling, who established these studies years ago, Ray White for some help in the lab, and then Dr. DeLon for also helping with this. I'd also like to thank our research assistant, Dustin Kelly, for most of his work in the farm management, Texas A&M AgriLife Research for funding this project, along with the NRCS and the Texas State Support Cotton Inc., and the Presidential Fellowship at Texas Tech University in Sustainable Land and Water Development for paying for me for the last 3 years. So, with that, I stand ready for any questions y'all might have. Yes.
The variability in the organic carbon is kind of hard to believe, right? Total carbon, because what was the bulk density of soil at 0 to 15
minutes? Usually 1.3 to 1.4.
Right, so that meant that there was a difference of 6 grams per kilogram, and then you multiply that to the bulk density and 1.5 times the depth.
Yeah.
So it's pretty hard to believe, but it seemed like the permanganate oxidizable carbon, of course, changed significantly. And I just would like to mention that it's probably really important not only the timing of samples, but how many.
Right, exactly. How many samples? So we originally calculated. We did one sample where we only collected 6, and then we did another where we collected 12, and we calculated the variability. And based on the variability calculation, we determined that 12 samples, it was 11.63 samples is how many you need to take per plot to reduce that variability to within one standard deviation. So that's how we came up with the 12. Yes, ma'am.
I was just curious, you had mixed versus rye that you mm-hmm. covered.
Well, if you look at the cover itself, the rye is 50% of the mixed cover. Then we had winter pea, which is about 15%, and then the rest was the hairy vetch and the tillage radish. Unfortunately, with our winters in Lubbock, it freezes before we can get a good crop establishment, and so we've had very little growth within anything but the pea and the rye. And the rye really does tend to dominate the system. So I would say most of that is just because we're measuring rye in a mixed cover.
Can you explain some of the differences? You know, you peaked in, I think it was March, both on your organic carbon and your permanganate, mm-hmm. and then you get a huge drop.
Yes.
How do you explain some of that?
Mostly.
Why did you get such a huge drop? Well, why did you get a buildup and such a huge drop?
I think the buildup is mostly related to, we've had some growth here in these months as well, but we've had cooler, drier temperatures. Then we have spring rainfall events that normally take place between late February, early March. I usually try to collect these samples my second moisture readings as well, so usually around toward the end of the month. Towards the middle, usually 16th or 17th is when I collect them. So it's possible that it could be due to the active root exudation from the cover itself, one. It's a fibrous root compared to the taproot of cotton, so you may get more of that influence there. Two, we may have more mineralization from the microbes as well, that interacting within the system. And then the drop-off, I think, is because when we terminate, then we have some really dry temperatures in those no-till plots. Because we operate in a very dry system, and one of the issues with cover crops that we're concerned about is how much water does that cover use. And so there may be less water than available once we terminate that hasn't been made up for yet by rainfall or irrigation. So the increase I most likely think is due to the rise of deposition from the roots, as well as the mineralization from previous organic matter that's been sloughed off, as well as any buildup from previous months. And then the drop-off, I think, is really due to the dry temperatures and the fact that there's not enough biomass there to support buildup over time. I do believe, though, that once we plant, that the reason why we see such a big increase here is not just because of the cotton, because the cotton plants aren't that big in July, but because of the mineralization from this event later on in the time period. So I'll be interested to collect the samples in May, June, and July to see how that trend follows as well.
No, we need to call the questions at this time, and hopefully you'll stick around. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.